Are you a Hawkeye fan living in Story County? Do you feel isolated, like you're alone in a maze of red? Well, you're not the only one. And that's why we here at StoryCounty.news have launched a brand new section of our website, From the Hawkeye of the Storm, which will feature our weekly podcast, Brada's Branded Thoughts, as well as other Hawkeye-related content for all you Story County residents who bleed black and gold, or if you live in Western Iowa, Eastern Iowa, or somewhere else other than Ames and you're a Hawkeye fan. We'd love your support. All of our content is free, so again, give our Facebook page a follow, give it a like, and give our Twitter page a follow as well, @FromTheHawkeye, @FromTheHawkeye on Twitter. The more likes, the more follows, the more support we get, the more content we can continue to push out, and it's all free. It's From the Hawkeye of the Storm, hosted by StoryCounty.news, for the best Hawkeye content in the area. Week 148 of Brada's Branded Thoughts. We are talking a little bit about a couple different topics on this week's program, one of which is Iowa football related. There have been some changes announced to the Iowa football coaching staff. And of course, we're in the midst of an Iowa basketball season, which is sort of derailed and now has come back on the tracks, it seems, after two straight wins, including a win over a top 25 Rutgers team and a road win at East Lansing in the Breslin Center against the Michigan State Spartans. We've got John Orgias on the show with us, who's been on the show with us in the past. And the reason we wanted him back on today is because of what happened this past week in the NFL. Of course, he was on with us when the, I don't know if you want to call it a scandal or the accusations about some bias in the Iowa football program began to rear its ugly head this past summer. And to put this in context, remember this broke in June of 2020, and up until the season started, the upcoming season in October, that was when the lawsuit was announced by a group of former Iowa players against Kirk Ferentz, against Brian Ferentz, against the Iowa University of Iowa. So we've had a lot of different coverage of this. We, of course, talked to Clinton Solomon about it. We talked to Amari Spivey, two former African-American black players. We also talked to a former black player in Edmund Miles who had a much different reaction to it. And I don't want to speak for Clinton Solomon or Maurice Pavey, so go back to our podcast and listen to those episodes. But the point is, Iowa let go of Chris Doyle. There were other people involved in some of the accusations. Remember, there was a law firm down in Kansas City that looked into the accusations and basically came to the conclusion, and again, I don't want to summarize this, but they came to the conclusion that Iowa had some problems to fix. There were some maybe biases or at least mistreatment of former players. And again, read that report. You can find that online. It was the Hush Blackwell law firm down in Kansas City that investigated and did a report on the University of Iowa and the football program. But here's my issue. And I understand people have a different opinion on this. And so I don't want to offend anybody. So I'm going to be careful about how I go about this. And then I want to get your response, John. But Chris Doyle, of course, number one strength and conditioning coach in the country for the last 20-some years. He's let go by Iowa. Some people considered it to be a bit of a situation where he was becoming the scapegoat for the for the entire program. I could see that line of view. I don't know if that's true or not. But he was let go. Got a fairly hefty bonus, I think over $1 million. Not a bonus, but basically a compensation for being let go. His son, Dylan Doyle, who was anticipated to be the starting linebacker at Iowa this year, transfers down to Baylor. So he's down in Waco, Texas. Chris Doyle, unemployed. Urban Meyer, meanwhile, former Ohio State, Florida, and Bowling Green head coach and coach at Utah, the Utes. He takes the head coaching job at Jacksonville in the NFL, Jacksonville Jaguars. So he's a head coach down there. People are speculating they're going to get the number one pick. They are going to get the number one pick. So people think he's going to take Trevor Lawrence in the first round of the NFL draft, quarterback from Clemson. So things are going great. Urban Meyer releases his group of hired staff. And on that staff was, what do you know, Chris Doyle. Who, again, very highly successful strength coach, sent so many players. And he was. I mean, I think even Kirk Ferentz would acknowledge it. He was a big part of this program. We're not overemphasizing how important he was. He was a big part to this program, big part of Iowa's development, getting players to the next level. He's hired by Urban Meyer, and I don't know what his official title was, if it was like sports medicine director or something like that, but I think it was basically the equivalent of strength and conditioning coach. That was on, I believe, Thursday, and within 24 hours, there had been so much backlash that Urban Meyer received from the national media and even the local media here in Iowa, which we'll get to, about Chris Doyle being hired, that 24 hours later, Chris Doyle resigns. Now, we have basically stayed fairly neutral on this subject because I don't know Chris Doyle. I know a few of the players. I'm not buddy-buddy with a lot of the players. Again, I've had some pretty in-depth conversations with Mari Spivey, Clinton Solomon, Edmund Miles, and a couple other former players. And I'm only talking about African-American players. But I'm not in a position to say who is at fault, what the repercussion should be. What I know is this. There was a group of players that sued the University of Iowa. There was a group of players that said that Chris Doyle was a problem. Some very successful players who went on to play in the NFL. Some very unsuccessful players who transferred out of the program, didn't get their degree at Iowa, failed at the next level. Akram Wadley is one of these players, failed in the NFL, and now is looking for a buyout basically from Iowa via this lawsuit, which I think is ridiculous, and we've talked about it. But my question to you, John, is from your unbiased perspective, and again, you got to put race to the, race was at the center of some of the allegations. But regardless of if this was a situation of racial disparities or if it was just a situation of cruel treatment crossing the line, regardless of that, does Chris Doyle deserve to be basically put on a blacklist the rest of his career to where he is unable to coach at other schools or other programs or other franchises? Your reaction to the fact that Chris Doyle had to resign on Friday?
So the one reason why you do bring me on here is because I other than my talking with you, I've learned more about sports because of you. But yeah, like you said, very unbiased because I'm not really a sports guy. But I just, the issue I see with this is who is making this decision. They hired the guy. I'm sure. I'm really perplexed that if they made a decision, we're hiring you. Surely they would have known there would have been some fallout, so they weren't willing to stand by him. So that kind of means. Trying to figure out the best way to word this to get my thought across.
Well, as you're thinking, let me read you what Urban Meyer said when he initially hired Chris Doyle. And keep in mind, Urban Meyer is also a controversial coach because although everybody agrees that Urban Meyer is a tremendous, tremendous talent from a coaching perspective, let me give you a background on Urban Meyer. Head coach at Bowling Green, coached at Utah, head coach at Florida, head coach at Ohio State. Now, in the process of his coaching tenures at Florida, and I know he had a longer history of this, but at Florida and Ohio State, his teams had a history of criminal issues. Okay, so there is a stigma, rightfully or wrongfully, probably rightfully, based on his history, that Urban Meyer thinks he can get away with having anybody in the program he wants to have in, and the standards are not really that high. Let me give you an example of this. You probably remember, and maybe you don't, but you'd have to Google it. The sports world certainly remembers it, and it turned into a national non-sports news story. The case of Aaron Hernandez, former NFL tight end, who was convicted of murder and then hung himself in prison a couple of years ago. I don't know if you remember this story, but Aaron Hernandez was a tight end under Urban Meyer at Florida. And there, he had some behavioral issues at Florida. Ended up playing in the NFL, was a great NFL player, and then, like I said, convicted of murder where he hung himself in his cell. Pretty terrible story. Oddly enough, he had Aaron Hernandez's brother used to be an assistant coach at Iowa. That's kind of an odd coincidence. But my point is this. Urban Meyer has kind of always had the aura that he can basically make decisions because he's a college football coach. College football coaches have a power that once you get to the NFL, you just don't have anymore. And so here's what Meyer said after let me give you what he said before the Chris Doyle resignation. So after he was hired, and he was pressed by the Associated Press. He was pressed by the USA Today. I mean, he was confronted on this hire. And, you know, like you said, you had to have known this was coming when you hire a guy who got let go because of this. He says on Thursday, "I've known Chris for close to 20 years. Our relationship goes back to when I was at Utah and he was the number one strength coach. I vetted him thoroughly along with our general manager and owner. I feel great about the hire, about his expertise at that position. We vetted him thoroughly and sports performance is going to be a high, high priority." Now, there were other quotes here. I'm not going to give you all of them, but this is what Rod Graves of the Fritz Pollard Alliance, which is an organization that is apparently dedicated to championing diversity in the NFL. They called the hiring, quote unquote, unacceptable. "At a time when the NFL has failed to solve its problem with racial hiring practices, it is simply unacceptable to welcome Chris Doyle into the ranks of the NFL coaches. Doyle's departure from the University of Iowa reflected a tenure riddled with poor judgment and mistreatment of black players. His conduct should be as disqualifying for the NFL as it was for the University of Iowa." Urban Meyer's statement, "I've known Chris for close to 20 years, reflects the good old boy network that is precisely the reason there is such a disparity in employment opportunities for black coaches." So that's the pressure. And again, it wasn't just Rod Graves or the Fritz Pollard Alliance. I think that was a significant point of the pressure. But there was also just pressure from news organizations all over the country. One thing I don't understand is, and I'm not going to name names on this, but some of the Iowa media retweeting tweets and stories about how crazy it is that Jacksonville hired him. I don't understand that. Why are we as Iowa fans or Iowa media people, why do we care what Chris Doyle does from here on out? Like, why? I'm not saying he should or shouldn't have been hired, but why are we? Why do we have a dog in the race? You know, like, what? I don't understand that aspect of it. Why? I don't know. I guess I look at it and I think the tiles or the chips should fall where they fall without the Iowa media having anything to do with this. But maybe they just feel it's their job.
Well, that I think that's what I was trying to, but I couldn't quite figure how to articulate it. It's, you know, it's like we'll constantly hear people say, if Facebook wants to censor something, that's their right. If Twitter wants to censor something, that's their right. They're not a government. They don't have to provide free speech. They are a company. They don't have to do anything we as citizens have any say in, because that's their right as a company. So with this, I think it's a slippery slope we've seen it with many businesses. They're made to backstep or change things, right or wrong, because of cancel culture. That's really what this is about. And, you know, it's, I think people that live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. That, I mean, no one is above reproach in anything they do in life. Everybody makes mistakes. I don't know this Doyle guy, like you said. I mean, who's to say that somebody can't change? I'm, you know, getting on a personal matter, I'm bipolar. About 20 years ago now, I was a raging lunatic. Now, my wife kind of thinks I still am, but anyway, that's beside the point. But I can attest, people maybe will still have to struggle with things, but people can make changes. And to destroy somebody's career for the rest of their life.
Yeah, and that's the issue I have. I I'm not saying this, I want to make very clear, we are not commenting on the race issue. If he had racial bias, he deserved to be fired. But I'm questioning at what point has he been punished enough for that? Again, I don't even know if there was there racial bias. Okay, Hush Blackwell said it seemed that there were biases. I'm going to quote, I'm going to keep this anonymous because I don't want to put him in an awkward position. Former Iowa, very successful former Iowa African American football player, texted me on Sunday. His response to this story: "It is a sad situation. I don't think he should be kept out of the job." And that was a simple quote from him. So I want to make it clear, this is not, and that's why I've always been trying to be very careful about how we go about this, because we're two white males that can't relate to racial bias. We just can't. And that's, you know, it's terrible. There is so much injustice in this world. We know that. I just wonder, at what point has Chris Doyle been punished enough? He got fired from Iowa. That was his punishment. Now, people may respond and say, well, he got a $1.2 million buyout or something. I agree. That's outrageous. You fire somebody with cause, but there's a $1.2 million buyout. I think the reason they did that is because they didn't want to have to go to the lawsuit to prove there was cause, which is just more bad publicity for the University of Iowa. And I think Chris Doyle probably would have taken him to court over it. I don't know. I just it's disappointing to me. And maybe Meyer is completely out of line for hiring him and thinking he could get away with it this soon. I could see that maybe because it's this soon. I just wonder, are we really going to say, when there were differing opinions, people keep saying, well, it was clear that there were biases. Okay, that's what this Hush Blackwell law firm, they came to that conclusion based on the opinions of a lot of different players. But we know there were players who are African-American who said they felt it was just tough coaching. And there was clearly mistreatment. We know that, but was it based on race? And there are some players that have lobbied against that notion and have supported Kirk Ferentz and even Chris Doyle. So I'm not taking sides on this. I want to make that clear. It's disappointing when somebody like Chris Doyle is basically canceled out by the media. That's my issue with it.
Yeah, that's it. If he was hired on, the person that hired him knew there would be backlash, should have stood to their, whether it's right or wrong. If it was me, if I had made that decision, I would have come back with, yes, we know that's an issue. We've addressed it with him. We talked with him. We told him that if we see any signs of it, he is out. He knows he's toeing the line. Anything. But, you know, to just say, oh, well, the media talks, so you're done. I mean, without any chance for even attempting redemption. I mean, maybe he's not capable of redeeming himself, but let him prove for himself that. Has anything been heard from the players about this decision that Doyle was going to be there? Had there been any?
You mean players at Jacksonville in the NFL?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not aware of any. I do know this. I think it was asked to Urban Meyer. I had to look back at the press conference, but I believe he was asked, did you weigh this when you were considering whether, because keep in mind, these aren't collegiate athletes. These NFL players have a lot more power than these collegiate athletes do. Jamias Ramsey who might Jacksonville go after? J.J. Watt. Well, J.J. Watt's white. Let me think of a black guy. If they're trying to go after Cam Newton, if the Patriots go a different direction and the Jacksonville Jaguars welcome Cam down there, if he knows Chris Doyle's on that staff, he may just not sign with him. So, like, my question is, okay, players know the background of what happened at Iowa, and they know Chris Doyle's on the staff. So wouldn't this have been sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy had it gone south? I mean, you hire him on, and the players are like, I'm not going to be with this racist freak. I'm not going to sign with you. Or, believe me, he starts doing this in the NFL, he's going to either get the heck beat out of him, or they're just going to keep being losers of a sports team because players aren't going to want to play for him.
Exactly. Let the company fall or succeed on its own merits, or let the team fall or succeed on its own merits. There'd be plenty of time fairly shortly. If this is genuinely an issue, it would show itself again pretty Even
if it didn't show itself again, like I said, there may be enough players that just refuse to play for a guy with this background, and that's their right to do that.
Right. But let them deal with it and not media force a decision.
Right.
I think that there is too much media controls how people think today. Well, it always has.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think that's the issue, is people don't generally think for themselves or try to be balanced. I'm talking from my I was a total jerk 20 some years ago. I mean, I was a mean, nasty person. And without trying to get too much into it, I just wasn't a nice guy. And I still can be very impatient. I can still be, you know, jerky at moments, but I'm not that person. And it took a lot of effort and a lot of work. But I'm just saying, people can make an attempt to try and to just make the decision that we're the media, we can just cancel you out.
So my question is,
that's wrong.
And so my question is, assuming Ristol is a racist, I want to make this very clear. When this all happened, I think I said it on this program, I thought he had to be fired. I thought he deserved to be fired. I thought he had to be fired. And that was that. I'm not dancing around. I'm not excusing his actions at all. I want to make that clear. I don't think either one of us are. We're not excusing his actions. But again, if assuming the worst of the worst, assuming he was blatantly racist, and we never really heard anything that was blatantly racist. There were a lot of innuendo and, you know, maybe insensitivity. I think it was a lot of insensitivity, and that's the feeling I got even from players who were lobbying against Cristobal, was he was not sensitive towards culture. And even Kirk Ferentz could be accused of that, absolutely could be accused of that, as could many other of the assistant coaches, including Kirk's son, Brian Ferentz. But assuming, let's just assume for the sake of this discussion, that Cristobal was a blatant racist. Along the same lines as what you addressed, does that mean what are the repercussions for that? What's the standard as society that should be set for that? Does that mean, like you said, does that mean that he no longer can work in coaching the rest of his career? That he should go, should he go to prison for this? Should he not be able to live in the state of Iowa for this? Like, why are the lines, who's setting these boundaries? Who's setting these standards? And who's enforcing them? Because, like I said, the Jacksonville made a decision, whether it was a stupid decision or not, and because of outside pressure, the decision had to be reversed. So I guess I'm just trying to figure out, like you said, and I'm not saying Chris Doyle changed. I'm not saying how much he needed to change.
I'm not saying that either. I'm just saying it's a bit harsh to... I just think that everybody should just back off a little bit and stop judging everybody.
Yeah. Well, just, and
give people a chance.
Some of the crap that Chris Doyle did, he ought to be ashamed of himself, and he ought to change the things he did. I'm not saying if they're racist or not, because I'm not in a position to say that. But some of the crap he did and said was completely out of line, uncalled for. Some of the allegations that he never really denied. Now, I had somebody say to me, well, he also never apologized. Okay, assuming he didn't. Okay, let's say he didn't apologize. Again, does that make him guilty for life? Because he never apologized. Does that mean that he is, again, forever condemned and he'll never be able to work again? You know, or on the other side of that, he was accused of being a racist and being racially insensitive. If he feels that his way of coaching was not mistreatment, it was simply coaching. If he feels it wasn't based on race, it was based on individuals. I'm not saying he shouldn't have apologized, because again, I don't know what it was based on, but why is the fact that he didn't apologize make him forever guilty? Like, you can be accused of something and feel differently.
And that's the other thing. Apologies don't mean anything.
Change means something.
Actions what mean. You'll see people come on and give all these apologies until they're blue in the face, and people are like, oh, it seems sincere, I accept it.
Right.
That doesn't mean anything.
Had Chris Doyle said, let's be honest, if he had submitted a statement and apologized, nobody would have cared. Nobody would have cared. It would not have made a difference. I don't think it would have made. He would have been fired either way. And I don't think any of the black players who allegedly suffered because of him would have taken it and said, oh, that makes me feel better. They'd have been still pissed at him, and maybe they had a right to be, but it wouldn't have made a difference.
But here's the deal. If media would have decided it was okay for some reason, then it would have been okay. You see, it's like if media decided, oh, we're going to accept his apology, that's all that would have mattered. Not if the players accepted his apology, not if the public accepted. But if media accepted his apology, then everything would be fine.
I want to make it clear, too, we're not just talking about, you know, sometimes the term mainstream media gets tossed around in the political realm. We're not talking about the political realm. We're talking about all media. We're talking about local media. We're talking about national media. We're talking about news networks. We're talking cable news networks. Everybody. You're right. Media fuels how people view things. It absolutely does. And that's how people get information. We've seen that at an extremely high level over the past year because of the political arena and because of COVID-19. I mean, the media just dominates people's thinking. And we could have a whole nother show on just that topic. But I'm with you. I'm not defending Chris Doyle. I don't know if he was, I don't know the extent of what was true and what was exaggerated. Because, again, there are two sides to this. There were some black players who defended him when he was at Iowa. Maybe more that didn't. So I acknowledge that. But I just think it would have been a self-fulfilling prophecy if he had gotten hired on there, because he would have failed. You don't have the power. Urban Meyer's finding out he doesn't have the power he had in college. Chris Doyle wouldn't have the power that he had at Iowa. And it's just disappointing the fact that, I feel like the media, and it wasn't just the media, it was whatever this other organization was, the Fritz Pollard Alliance. This is what Urban Meyer said on Friday, 24 hours after the hire. Chris Doyle came to us this evening and submit his resignation, and we have accepted. Chris did not want to be a distraction to what we are building in Jacksonville. We are responsible for all aspects of our program, and in retrospect, should have given greater consideration to how his appointment may have affected all involved. We wish him the best as he moves forward in his career.
See, I have some issues with that, how that's worded, but maybe I'm reading too much into it.
Well, first of all, it's bogus to think that Chris just voluntarily submitted his resignation.
Right. Well,
that didn't happen.
The next sentence is kind of change that, because read the sentence right after to say he voluntarily gave his...
Chris did not want to be a distraction to what we are building in Jacksonville. Then, we are responsible for all aspects of our program, and in retrospect should have given greater consideration to how his appointment may have affected all involved.
I don't know. In retrospect, we should have. That tells
24 hours later. 24 hours later after the media called him out for it.
Yeah, they made the decision. I feel like they made the decision.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I think it's hilarious how Urban Meyer, and again, this is also probably just... I don't want to say it's Urban Meyer probably thinking he could get... I'm not defending Urban Meyer in this.
No, that's the false apology. That's what this is. This is one of those false apologies I was talking about.
Yeah. And he ought to... Urban Meyer probably, unfortunately, should have known that he couldn't make decisions unless he had the backing of the media. The media, if the media doesn't back what you're doing, they're going to tear you up. And now, obviously, there was this Fritz Pollard Alliance that also had an issue with it. But you're right. 24 hours didn't make him – like, there was nothing new that was brought to the table in 24 hours. What was new from 24 hours before was how much backlash, how much pressure was placed on Urban Meyer from the NFL media and from even other sources of media. And so, I don't know. I'm not defending anybody in this situation. I'm simply saying I wish the media hadn't. But again, the media sticks their nose in a lot of things. And keep in mind, I used to be part of the local media, so I'm not just trying to tear into media people and reporters and whatnot, but it's just disappointing that I think that it had to go this way. Give this guy a chance to see, like you said, has he changed? Has he adjusted? You know, and this is his career, so I don't know.
But yeah, I think they should have just let it play out. I think that if see, this is how little I know about sports. You keep saying the guy's name, and I keep forgetting it. The guy that hired him,
Urban Meyer.
Okay, say it's a if it was the good old boy system, that was definitely a breakdown. Because I'm not one that vouches for the good old boy system. I came from a small town. I don't like the good old boy system, but
yeah.
in my experience, the good old boy system would have said, no, we're standing by our guy. And right. They didn't. They would have said, you know what? We know these are concerns. Like I said before, we know these are concerns. We feel confident he is going to walk the straight and narrow going forward. And if there's any issue, then we'll deal with it. But they didn't even do that. They said, okay, we're out. Peer pressure.
And maybe, you know what? We don't know this. Maybe there would have been a plethora of players, black and white, that would have been like, I really want to go to Jacksonville because this guy knows how to train. Because he sure could put a lot of Iowa players in the NFL. Like, we just don't know because it didn't play out.
Right.
And I just think it's funny how people just act like, what a stupid idea for Urban Meyer to hire Chris Doyle. I mean, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But we will never find out because we waited 24 hours and then, you know.
Right. Yeah, it seemed pretty impulsive. The whole way it was handled.
So I do want to switch gears here to finish up our podcast this week. Iowa, it was announced this week that Tim Polasek, the offensive line coach, moves to offensive coordinator for the Wyoming Cowboys. So it's a step up in position. We'll get to that in a second. And then Iowa's running back coach, who is African-American, whose name now escapes me. And I can't think of it, but that's frustrating. Let's see here. Oh, Derek Foster. Duh. Derek Foster took a job with the LA Chargers. I don't know how much Derek Foster is making with the Chargers. Certainly living in LA. It's going to cost a lot more to live in LA than Iowa City. Don't know. Obviously that's I think that's probably a step up. You're a position coach in college, and now I think he's just a position coach in the NFL. So certainly I would think that's a step up, but again, cost of living. And then Tim Polasek going to Wyoming, I'm sure it's actually cheaper to live out in Wyoming than it is in Iowa City, would be my guess. So because, of course, there was speculation as soon as the two Iowa assistants announced they were leaving, you know, there was speculation, is there a problem here? Why are these coaches dipping out? Now, Tim Polasek's white. So I don't think it would go back to the racial issues necessarily, but could there be another issue? You know, Kirk Ferentz, his longevity has been questioned for several years now. He's certainly, as far as we're aware, he's coming back this next season and probably the season after that. But does that raise any red flags to you, having two position coaches leaving in the course of a week? From the University of Iowa, this is a program that has lost position coaches and filled those positions relatively quickly in the past. But just given the dynamic with the racial bias allegations and the investigation over the course of this past year, does that raise any red flags to you?
I'm not sure. There's so much that's happened in this last year financially as well that I know that has impacted the university. Who knows? I mean, we don't know. I don't know how those kind of contracts work. Maybe there was pay cuts in the future. I don't know. You know, there could have been a lot of things to maybe say, you know, we need to move. Or maybe it was just time. It could just be all coincidental. There's so many factors with how COVID has impacted stuff that it's really hard to say what might be the motivation there, in my opinion. But again, I'm not really speaking from an educated point of view on this.
I do want to throw this in there, and we have not recorded a podcast, I don't believe, since the Super Bowl. I do want to throw this in here, and this is breaking news, just broke 19 minutes ago. Ex-NFL wide receiver Vincent Jackson has been found dead in Florida at age 38. Sad story. I remember watching Vincent Jackson, quite a talent for Tampa Bay. This is a extremely sad story. He played 12 seasons in the NFL, last with the Tampa Bay Bucks, and this is sad, so especially for that Buccaneers organization, to, you know, just winning the Super Bowl behind an impressive showing from Tom Brady and the rest of that team, and now they lose one of their great wide receivers. So sad news there to pass along from the NFL. Iowa basketball. I want to touch on that briefly. Iowa moves to, I believe, number 11 in the new rankings, the new AP rankings, which came out today. They're number 11, up four spots from number 15. The coaches poll, they're up two spots to number 14 from number 16. I don't know how much these rankings matter. We always have to throw them in there anyways, but Iowa has won two straight, beating number 25 Rutgers at home, winning by, 30 at Michigan State. Impressive performance on Saturday. I will say this. People have kind of taken the bull and ran with it over these last three games: the Indiana game on the road, which Iowa lost, the Rutgers game at home, which they won, and the Michigan State game on the road, which they won. People are assuming that Iowa's defense is fixed simply because these teams have not scored much against Iowa. I do want to remind people that Iowa is still 108 as of 4 o'clock this afternoon, Monday afternoon, 108 in the country in defensive efficiency. Okay. Villanova's 90. LSU is 137. Those are the only other teams in the top 30 with that low of a ranking in overall KenPom ratings. So let's keep that in mind, that Iowa has not played offensive juggernauts these past three games. Rutgers' offense stinks, okay? Their offense right now is 57, okay? They're number 25 in the country in the AP poll, 57 in KenPom's offensive efficiency. The reason they're so high overall in the rankings is because they're number 13 in defense. Same thing with Indiana. Indiana, let me find them down here on the list. Boy, have they slipped, or am I skipping them here? Indiana's 29, but again, the reason they're so high in KenPom is to get the number 24 defense, number 53 offense. Michigan State is 69. With the number 40 defense and the number 99 offense. These are not very good offensive teams that Iowa has played. So everybody needs to stop this. I have a term I want to use, but I'm not going to use it. Everybody has to stop this overreaction to the fact that Iowa has actually held these last three teams down defensively. The true test for Iowa is their defense improved? Is it not improved? Is when they play Michigan at the end of the year, they play Ohio State again on the road, and even Penn State. This game on Sunday, a week from yesterday, against Penn State, should be an interesting one. I say that not because Penn State's a great team, but we've seen Iowa lose games like this. Penn State's got the number 34 offensive efficiency in the country. That's a good offense. Not a great offense, but a good offense. If Iowa struggles against Penn State, against Ohio State, against Michigan, my opinion of this defense has not changed. We had Frank Henderson, Tony Perkins' uncle, on the show last week. We talked about maybe switching to more man-to-man, and that's exactly what Fran did. More man-to-man we saw in these last three games than ever before, especially the last two games, and it seems to be working. But again, these are not good offenses, so I don't want to hear this garbage about what a jump Iowa made defensively. The teams Iowa has struggled against defensively: Gonzaga, who's number two overall in offense. They haven't played Michigan yet. Illinois, who's number eight overall in offense, and Ohio State, who's number four overall in offense. So let's just push the brakes a bit. Now, Wisconsin, I will say this. Wisconsin, their offensive efficiency is a little bit higher than I would have anticipated. They're number 31. So Thursday is certainly going to be a test. But what Thursday's test is more for is Iowa's offense, because Wisconsin's defense is number nine in defensive efficiency. So Thursday will be a test. But even if they hold Wisconsin down, I am not sold. And that's okay. These players need to look at this and say, hey, we got to prove it to each other and to everybody, most likely just themselves. They need to prove it each and every game because, of course, the Big Ten tournament and the NCAA tournament is coming up. Now, my other issue I wanted to focus on real briefly, and by the way, Iowa does play 6 o'clock Thursday, Wisconsin, ESPN, 4 o'clock Sunday, Penn State on, I believe, BTN. The last thing I want to talk about here, John, and I'll get your opinion on this as well. This has obviously been a year in sports in general, including college sports and college basketball, that has been writhed with COVID pauses, games being postponed, some being canceled. A lot of games in college basketball have been postponed, with the idea that they can make up basketball games better or easier than they can make up football games. Nebraska, Penn State have each gone on a pause. Michigan State's had several games postponed. I don't think they ever actually technically paused. But when you pause, basically means all the players have to go to their dorms or their apartments, and they cannot practice in an organized fashion with the team. Penn State and Nebraska both had to do that. They've come back. They've played every game. They've been rescheduled. And they're probably going to make up all their games, even though they missed like four or five initially. Maybe even more. I think Nebraska missed maybe six. Michigan has the same thing happen. This variant, one, I think it's a South African variant, pops up in the athletic department up at Michigan. And so the Department of Health up in Michigan says, we're shutting down the athletic department in Michigan for 2 weeks. There was never any positive cases with the men's basketball team, but the two-week pause happened. The players advocated to play. They wanted to play instead of be paused, but that petition was not granted. They had to be paused for 2 weeks. They were scheduled to play Illinois, I believe, last Thursday or Friday, which would have been 2 days after their return from pause, so they only would have had 2 days for practice. Here's my issue with what happened. Michigan decides they're going to cancel or postpone the game against Illinois. Now, explain to me why Michigan, who's number one in the conference right now, has the best record in the Big Ten, is on their way to winning the Big Ten if they continue playing the way they are. Why do they have the right, as the number one team in the Big Ten, to say, we're going to postpone our first game back because we want to have more time to practice? Because basically the reason they said they were postponing that game against Illinois was because of their return-to-play plan. Now, again, you as an outsider, does that seem fair that Penn State and Michigan, or Penn State, Michigan State, and Nebraska have to come back and play a game maybe after only a couple days practice, whereas Michigan can say, no, we're going to postpone this game so we have 4 or 5 days to practice before our first game? What are your thoughts?
No, that's clearly messed up.
And they were allowed to do it.
I mean, the
Big Ten allowed them to do it.
Yeah, it should apply to everyone.
This is a year where you go when you opt in to play at the beginning of the year, you knew that having a COVID pause was possible. Having two COVID pauses was possible. And you play through it. That's part of this year. And it's got nothing to do with me thinking that they shouldn't have paused. I can't say the Department of Health made that decision. I trust the Department of Health up in Michigan. But the Department of Health paused them for 2 weeks, not 2.5 weeks. Mm-hmm. And Michigan said, we're going to pause that next game against Illinois. I don't think Iowa has a shot at the regular season Big Ten title, so this is not me being a bitter fan. I think Iowa's played their way out of contention for the regular season Big Ten title. But I just think it's sad for Illinois. It's sad for Ohio State, who I think are the two sub-favorites to win the Big Ten at this point in the season, that they weren't able to play. And if I was Illinois, I would have said, heck no, you're playing us. And I guess Illinois agreed to it. And maybe there's more behind the scenes that I'm not aware of. But again, all I know is Penn State, Nebraska, and Michigan State all had to play fresh off pauses, even though technically Michigan State wasn't paused, but they hadn't been practicing altogether. They played right after. And then Juwan Howard, the head coach, basically said a couple days ago after they postponed that game, I don't think it's safe to play all 20 because we shouldn't have to play every other day. Well, why did you postpone your last game? If you hadn't postponed your last game, you would have gotten all the games in. So now they're advocating, well, we can play less games and still win the title. I just think it's messy. I know people can disagree with me. I just don't think it's – I think the Big Ten should have done something about it. But you and I have both discussed the Big Ten back in college football and their lack of decision-making and lack of leadership.
Yeah, that's not – I'm all about – you know, life isn't fair, but we can at least try to be – fair. That just doesn't seem fair.
Well, and I think their excuse was, well, our players need a couple more. I think the inference they were making was we need more time to practice because our players haven't been they're not physically ready to compete. And I just don't buy that. You had 2 weeks to pause, you get two days to practice. Again, why was Nebraska able to do it? Why was Penn State able to do it? And somehow Michigan State or Michigan was not able to do that.
Well, unless did some of their players get COVID?
No, zero positives pause. There was no positive cases when the University of Michigan or the Department of Health paused the activities for 2 weeks. There were no positives within the basketball team, and there were no positives anytime throughout the pause.
Yeah, no, that to me, I think they should just have the same rules as everybody else. No one got a, I wouldn't say it's a free ride, but no
it's,
one.
It's an advantage. It's an advantage is what it is.
Advantage. They had to keep going.
And now they're advocating, well, we shouldn't have to even make up all the games because it's not fair to our players to have to play every other day. Yeah, it's not fair, but it's also not fair for Nebraska, Penn State, Michigan State to have to do it, and yet they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I you know, it's hard because the Big Ten and the NCAA have a lot to work out with COVID. They're trying to get the NCAA tournament in. They're trying to get the Big Ten tournament and all these conference tournaments in, and they're trying to get all the games rescheduled. Now,
sorry to interrupt, but I was analyzing what you said a little bit ago, and it really perplexed me. Are you saying they're trying to get out of having to play all the games now?
Basically, the Big Ten, the way the Big Ten regular season, you basically have two titles in the conference. Conference teams play each other, and whoever has the best record after 20 games within your own conference, there's 14 teams in the conference, you play 20 games total, the team with the best record wins the regular season championship. Okay. Then everybody goes to a Big Ten tournament, which is over the course of 5 days, and whoever wins that wins the Big Ten tournament title. But the Big Ten regular season title is who has the best record after 20 games. The question has been over the past several months, if the Big Ten can't, if there's too many postponements and they just can't make up all these games, then what's going to determine who has the best record if Michigan's only played 16 games, Iowa's played 20, Wisconsin's played 16. You know what I'm saying? Different numbers of games being played are not all equal. You can't. So right. Michigan's now advocating, even though I think Michigan could still get all these games made up. The Big Ten's going to have to figure out how to reschedule them, and Juwan Howard's not going to like playing every other day. But the reality is the season ends early March, and they've got, 3 weeks until the Big Ten tournament. So that's the reason why it's such an issue, is because now Juwan Howard is saying, I don't really feel, I mean, it was already an issue with me because they should have to play fresh after a pause like everybody else. And now to say that, well, we don't feel the need to have to play 20 games because we're concerned about our players' health. And yet you also voluntarily postponed a game, even though everybody on your team was healthy and the Department of Health said you could play. That's my problem.
Right. Now I have another question for you. Has any of the teams gotten 20? I think you said one of them has done their 20 games.
Well, no. I mean, we're still all working on our 20 games. We've got so put this in perspective. The season goes until, let me look at Iowa's schedule. Iowa has had two games postponed. One has already been made up against Michigan State. The other game against Nebraska that was postponed has not been rescheduled yet, but they've only got that one game to reschedule. Michigan has five games to reschedule now. Iowa has played 14 games. They're 9-5. Michigan is 9-1. So they've played four less games to this point. But they've already got their schedule, and Michigan's schedule ends. See, their last game of the regular season ends on, let me find it here, on March 7th. The Big Ten tournament, I believe, begins on March 10th. So you can't just add on games to the end of the season because they all have to be available for the tournament on the 10th. So the Big Ten has to now reshuffle games and TV dates and times and all these things, which they've already had to do all year. But now Michigan just added another game, a fifth game, because there was already four postponed during the pause. Now it's a fifth game that has to be made up in the course of between now and March 7th. You see what I'm saying? So mathematically, there may not be opportunities for them to get all these games made up, which, again, I think is partially Michigan's fault for postponing those games.
So now they, when they do these games, again, this is completely ignorance on my part, there's a rotation, I assume, right? Every team has to play every team, or is it not necessarily?
Well, you've got 14 teams, so 13 not including your own team. So you don't play everyone twice because you only get 20 games. You play, let's see how that work. You play seven. I can't think now. You play 10 teams twice. No, what am I thinking here? Of course, you had to ask me this question. You play a certain number. I can't do the math in my head right now. You play a certain number of teams twice, and then the other teams you only play once. All the schedules made up before the season ever starts. So
I'm like, sure there's someone they could mathematically look at who's played what teams and say, okay, we've got, you said 14 is the most played by one team. We could say, okay, Okay, I know there's a mathematical formula they could figure out.
Well, you could look at the schedule,
just say it's 14 for everybody now, and instead of 20.
But you could also look at it and say, what's the win percentage?
Well, that would work too.
Like right now, Michigan's win percentage is 90. Illinois is in second place at 76.9, even though they've played more games. But my point is, it still isn't fair that they were able to cancel a game because they weren't ready to play, when other teams have had to play when they weren't ready to play. That's my
issue. I get what you're saying now. Okay. So yeah.
But yeah, I don't think Iowa really has a chance. They're 4 games back. They're 4 losses back of Michigan. I mean, I'm not a bitter fan. I honestly think it's unfair to Illinois and Ohio State. It's not good for the integrity of the conference. But again, I don't expect the Big Ten. I hope the Big Ten makes them play the rest of their games. I hope they make them play the rest of their games, and I hope there's no more postponements. There haven't been postponements or pauses since that Michigan pause started. That's been like 4 weeks ago now. Right. 3 or 4 weeks ago. So there haven't been any pauses. So maybe we won't get any more postponements. And the COVID numbers are obviously going down across the country. That doesn't mean there still can't be outbreaks. But hopefully the Big Ten makes them make all these games up, because it's just, to me, it's rotten that they were able to do that. And I'm surprised that Illinois agreed to it, because according to the press release that was sent out, Illinois agreed to postpone that game. If I was Illinois, I'd have been like, look, part of the season, we're ready to play you, because Illinois is in second place in the conference right now. I also don't think it's a coincidence that Michigan decided to postpone that 5th game when it happened to be Illinois, who's second in the conference. Say it had been Nebraska. That was Michigan's first game back was Nebraska, 2 days after they came back from pause. Do you think they would have postponed that game then? They probably knew they could have beaten Nebraska even if they weren't 100% in their conditioning and in their play. And so anyways, that's my issue, but we'll move on from that. Again, Iowa and Wisconsin this Thursday, 6 p.m. on ESPN. And again, on Sunday, let me confirm that game against Penn State. Sunday, Penn State, 4 p.m. And let me double check the TV station. I believe that's BTN, but I want to confirm that. No, it's FS1. I'm glad I checked that. Fox Sports 1. So, again, Wisconsin's ESPN, Penn State's FS1. And then, of course, gauntlet time after. I mean, it's gauntlet time this week because Penn State and Wisconsin are both teams that could beat Iowa. But the next 5 games, these last 5 games, and again, hopefully Iowa gets that Nebraska game made up to get at Ohio State, at Michigan, and then home back at Iowa City, take on Wisconsin for the second time. Anything else you want to add, John?
No. Unfortunately, I don't. Like I said, I'm kind of ignorant to some of this stuff. So,
well, you've been informed. Thank you for having
me on, Corey. I guess I'm glad you find me of some benefit, comedic support.
I think it's good to be able to have someone who's separated from. You're not an Iowa fan. You're not an Iowa fan. There's no bias. And honestly, the Chris Doyle situation, I don't know that I thought he should have been fired when it happened. So I don't know that because I'm an Iowa fan, I have a different opinion about Chris Doyle. A lot of Iowa fans hate Chris Doyle, especially since he got fired. They just don't care about him anymore, and they want to move on. That's fine. I'm just trying to look at it from both sides, but we've made our stance on here clear. And again, there are African-American players who played for Chris Doyle that feel the same way. So this is not a matter of racial disparities or bias at all. Again, it was unfortunate what happened. Chris Doyle ought to be ashamed of himself for some of the things he did. You hope he's changed, and I hope that he gets the opportunity to demonstrate that he's made changes. Whether they were racially based, racially charged or not, his problems that he had, I hope he gets an opportunity to demonstrate that somewhere at some point.
I will say this. If he really did choose to resign on his part, if he came to them and said, you know what, I really don't want this affecting the team. I really, that's actually kind of humbling.
I don't think he did. I could be wrong. I could be totally wrong. I just know when he left Iowa and all the accusations came out, normally a coach like that would try to save their job and say, I'm so sorry for anybody I offended. I promise I didn't mean it that way. I'm going to work on this, but he never did that. And that's why it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And I get it. Basically what he said is I have never mistreated my players. This is all false. Have a nice day. And at that point I knew, okay, he's done. He's going down with the ship. And So I just don't think, and again, the buyout is also proof that I think he would have taken Iowa to court. He's not going to go down with that. He's not going to be a guy that resigns. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. Again, I mean, we don't know the guy. We know what he's been accused of, but we don't know him. But I just don't think he would have been the guy to resign willingly if he's unless he is totally changed to a point where he would. That seems like a massive change to where he would just not. Because again, a lot of the things that he was accused of at Iowa were wrong. They were insensitive. I think that whether they were racially charged might be a question, and maybe they weren't racially charged. But he needs to nip those insensitivities certainly in the bud. But we just won't ever know unless he gets another job and gets an opportunity to prove himself. So that's all I have. We will talk to everybody next week. Let's hope we get a win against Wisconsin. And we've got to figure out a way we're going to talk about March Madness this year, because I want to be able to actually have a March Madness special on our show where we break down the bracket. We're working on getting our, in fact, John, you've been behind this, so I want to give you a little shout out here. You've helped our website get launched, as well as getting our podcast platformed on the website. And, of course, we are trying to build our Twitter page and all this stuff, which is basically we're starting fresh because we've never really, besides our Facebook page, we really haven't ever done anything. We're also trying to get YouTube going. So hopefully we can get a March Madness special. By the time we get to the tournament in March, we'll be able to talk March Madness and maybe even have we can share our screen on YouTube and actually have a bracket with picks and whatnot. We can break it down and we'll figure out, maybe we can get a special guest on there. I don't know, but John's been a big help there. So we will talk to everybody next week. Again, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and we're going to try to grow these things. It's been slow going. We're also trying to grow our local site here in news site in Ames, Iowa. So it's all kind of a process in addition to our 9-to-5s, so to speak. So we will talk to everybody next week. This has been Brad's Branded Thoughts, week number 148. Go Hawks, beat the Badgers. We'll talk to you soon.